Welcome to the Island Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, as Tara Reid says, was at the beach today with my best friend, Maggio Cipriani, in Miami. Not my boyfriend, my best friend. How's it going?
Who is that? Who's that person?
I don't know. I looked him up and I don't know, some food stuff came up, some music stuff came up. Good looking guy, I'll tell you that.
Oh, strapping young. I'm glad she found herself a nice boy to hang out with and not be romantically involved with. I mean, it's good because I'd hate for there to be any sort of drama between her and Infected Mushroom. So
right. She dated. I feel like Infected Mushroom is more than one person. So, and I have nothing to base that off of other than, you know, concert pictures that she's tweeted out. And I don't know that. Like, I guess I wouldn't put it past her dating multiple people from the same band, but I don't know for sure, and it confuses me quite a bit.
She's dating a collective?
Yeah, she could be dating a collective. Maybe it's just a casual thing.
Speaking of collectively screwed, the Bulls.
I really didn't think we were going to have anything to talk about that much, because one, I'd forgotten that the Rose stuff happened Friday night, so you and I didn't get a chance to talk about it on the podcast. And two, yesterday was one of the most boring days of basketball I remember in quite some time. There was not a single interesting game. I watched the Utah Jazz need an explosion of points from Rudy Gobert to get past 70, which was fun. So I just really thought, we got a quiet little Monday to discuss whatever. And now we've got two major stories.
Yeah. So first off, Bulls fans, I feel for you. Sucks.
It does. Killed
Derrick Rose.
It does
sucks.
Really suck. It's just, you know, I mean, say this whenever someone gets injured. You don't want to see anybody get injured. And when it comes to a star, like, he just, good Derrick Rose adds so much to the league. Even bad Derrick Rose adds so much to the league.
Well, and, you know, I don't necessarily go into these kind of things, but a lot of people emotionally connected with Rose. They truly believe that he is the humble, genuine, heartwarming individual that Adidas has marketed him as. And
yeah,
so yeah. I'm not saying he's not. I don't know. I don't believe any athlete is what they say they are. But people really identify with that. And that's hard when you know, and there's kids that love D Rose. They're all excited for him to come back. And now, you know, so, I mean, we got to start with the same conversation you and I always seem to have about these things, which is, you know, like, he can come. He could come back and be fine, but I'm already like, man, I don't know. That's 50 games over 2 years, and that's both knees now having had surgery, and
yeah, it's 50 games over a course of 236 possible games, which is just, I'm no mathematician, but that's not a high percentage of games played.
You know, and he could come back fine, but I've also seen a lot of guys never come back. Not never, as in he won't play, but never get back to where
you
want to get back to.
One knee injury I don't worry about. One big knee injury, today's medicine, you can get past that. You injured the other knee, though, that's when I start thinking, all right, this maybe just is not his career. He can still come back and be a pretty good player, but you've got to start thinking the expected, you know, the expected shelf life for him is got to be really low in terms of being an impact player. Not an impact player, but you know what I mean, like an impact franchise type of guy.
Ethan buys into the running form theory, do you?
I don't know enough about it. I've never really studied running form before. Like, it's just not anything I've been interested in, and I'm sure there's some validity to it. I'm sure there's some stuff that has nothing to do with that. Like, I don't know one way or the other.
Both ESPN New York or ESPN Chicago and the Chicago Tribune are both reporting the same thing, which is they're not reporting anything concrete, but the indication immediately after the announcement that Rose is done for the season was that's it for this Bulls core. That's a wrap, folks.
And it should be, right?
Yeah.
Luol Deng is an expiring contract. You have to, I mean, there's no point in keeping him around. And plus, he's had his own health concerns over the years, and Thibodeau doesn't seem to know how to take him out of a game. So I just think that I don't know. I think that you got to try to move Boozer and Dang and accumulate assets for what you can. And I mean, hell, like I put them in the power tankings today as a team to keep an eye on. Why wouldn't they tank? I mean, I know that it's Thibodeau and it's Chicago and it's all this crap and Joakim Noah's not going to win tank and all that. You know, I get all that, but at a certain point, I mean, if I'm management, I'd try to gut the team as best I could, get in the race for one of these guys, try to get Jabari Parker, and have him ready to go when Rose comes back.
I wholly disagree that the Joakim Noah is not going to want to tank. I think if you told Joakim Noah, we're going to say that you have foot injury and you get to go sit for 3 months, Joakim Noah is going to be like, thank God.
I don't know. 3 months is a long time not to do what you love doing.
Man, but he's like, it's been painful watching him try and play. Like,
oh,
he's
certainly.
Been so much pain. Like, I think he'd rather get the year so he can get right and then come back.
I think you could convince him of that. I don't think he would be happy about it. I mean, he's going to want to play. I just don't think that, like, unless there was a, you could say, hey, this surgery, you could do it today and you'll be ready for next season and it'll fix your problems. Then I think he would be like, all right. But just sitting to sit, like, I don't see him doing that.
Boozer's really interesting because Boozer's actually played remarkably well. He's been maybe their most consistent player over the last 3 years.
Yeah, no, he hasn't played poorly by any means. He's been good. It's just in regards to maybe what they need as a secondary scorer. Well, I guess technically Luol Deng's their secondary scorer before Rose went down, but I don't know. I think you can, because he's got one more year after this after the season, right?
Right.
If you trade him at the deadline, that's not a terrible. That's not a terrible piece to pick up for, you know, a year and a half if you're a contending team. It's a lot of money, but you could. I mean, if you can dump a contract of your own, why not?
I'm trying to think who would be in position to do that. I keep going back to Denver. So I want to keep going back to it. Denver's got smaller pieces, can shed some money, can help the Bulls save money, get under the tax so that Reinsdorf can continue being Reinsdorf, and Boozer's a traditional power forward.
But hey, at least Paul Konerko's getting paid. yeah, I mean, I guess if you're Denver and you can shed, I mean, you offer up Fareed at a low contract, and then, I don't know, like, is shedding Wilson Chandler's contract enough, or do you need to go bigger and say, like, hey, we need to give you, like, we needed to get rid of JaVale McGee's contract?
I constructed a deal yesterday using the trade machine that it's Wilson Chandler, JaVale, and somebody else. Andre Miller go to the Bulls for Deng and Boozer and something else.
And yeah, if I'm Denver, I think I would certainly do that.
And that way, and the idea is, well, why would they want JaVale at $10 million? Well, for starters, they save $5 million to get under the tax, which again, biggest priority.
Yeah.
And two, your front court rotation is locked. Like, not your, you need a power forward, but you could theoretically start Taj Gibson.
Yes, you could.
And now you have a backup center, and you're like, do you really want to pay $10 million a year for JaVale McGee to be your backup center? And the idea is, well, you really wish that you still had Omer Asik around, so.
And that would have taken eight. So, yeah, I guess it's doable. It's not a crazy thought by any means. I think that, I mean, the nice thing about Andre Miller's contract is it's not guaranteed next year. So you shed even more money if you're the Bulls.
Where do we want Deng to go? What would be a good place for Deng to go?
I honestly don't even really care. I feel bad about that.
Really?
But I don't, if he stayed in Chicago, that would be fine for him. I just don't know. I don't know what the market is for him. He's a really good player, but I wonder how much of it is a system thing and how much of it is him being that talented. And the injury concerns worry me. Like, his body just looks broken at times.
Yeah.
I guess Washington would be a good call. And then you could, once Otto Porter is healthy, then you don't. I don't know. You have a nice rotation. I mean, Porter's probably much more of a backup the next couple of years anyway than a starter. Right. So at least like this year, it's not a big deal having him behind Luol Deng. Cleveland could be a possibility.
Yep.
Cleveland wouldn't be a bad idea. About the Thunder? You think the Thunder could do that?
I don't know if they have anything that the Bulls would take.
Because you almost have to move Perkins, right?
Yeah, Perkins would have to be involved in the deal, and it would have to be enough to where you're shedding a couple of million off the salary cap for Chicago. Thabo and Kendrick? And a pick? That's probably too much. Yeah, Thunder probably don't match up.
Tough.
It is tough.
Yeah, I don't know. I struggle with where he could go. It's weird because I think he's really talented. Like he's actually really impressed me with the fact that his jumper is so good now. Like he's reliably good scoring, which he was not for many years.
Yeah.
But you know, you're talking about money. You have to have find a team that's willing to pay him, but it's also like, well, we'll pay him, but we're also okay if he leaves in free agency.
Yeah, I guess that's the weird thing for me is figuring out. It is figuring out what the market is for him next year. Like, you could tell me he's going to get like a 3-year, $24 million contract, and be like, yeah, that's fine. You could tell me he's going to get $448 million, and be like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, I don't understand really what the market is going to be for him. There are going to be a lot of teams, you know, with some pretty decent cap space, so there will be money to spend. What if you're Utah? If you're Utah, is there a point of going after him, or you're resigned to being the worst team in the league?
You're resigned. You're definitely resigned. Like Deng's not fixing you, and you want to be bad. Like they plan to be bad. They want to develop a young talent.
Well, I don't think Deng would necessarily lift them up all that much. But I mean, if you could get rid of, I guess Marvin Williams expiring, so it doesn't matter anymore. Yeah, never mind.
I'm like on a trade machine trying to construct something like as we do this.
Well, Brooklyn.
The more I think about it, the more I like your Thunder idea. Your Thunder idea is really starting because I'm like, man, the Thunder would be pretty amazing with that.
I mean, that's probably somewhere where you have to get a third team, right?
Yeah, maybe. Interesting. If you're the Bulls, who's untouchable?
I guess Butler. I don't know. I mean, Jimmy Butler's really good, but he's getting a pretty big extension, right?
He was really good last year. He wasn't great to start this year.
That's just whatever. Like that team's in turmoil and trying to figure out. Like I don't put a ton of stock into that. I mean, God, if you're the Bulls, like trading Deng, trading Boozer, even trading Taj Gibson, like I'd try to get rid of all those guys.
You trade Taj, you wouldn't keep it because Taj is really cheap considering his production.
That's true. I just think that if you're gonna gut the team, you know, really gut the team. I don't see the point in half-assing. I know Taj is a nice placeholder for a while, but is he really your starting point power forward after Boozer's gone? Like, I don't know. I feel good about that, and I just think that I just think you have to have a plan to alleviate some of the pressure off of Derrick Rose and clearing cap space to bring in big guys via trade or free agency over the next two summers. Like that's the way you got to go.
Does Rose's injury, and they were supposed to be like a team that, I mean, hell, a lot of people picked them to win this year, which I thought was way premature.
Yeah, that was crazy.
But they picked them to win this year. And they thought they were going to be like a
You and I dynasty. Both had them for 60 wins, right? We thought they were going to be awesome in the regular season.
Yeah, I thought they were going to be great in the regular season, but that's because that's what Tibbs does. He just cranks out wins.
Right.
But they're supposed to be like a championship dynasty level team.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, is all that – I mean, if you're the Bulls, do you have to start hedging a little bit?
Absolutely. This is not – I mean, this is a second major knee injury. It's not as severe as the ACL, but it's significant enough. And I don't think you can construct a team to make Derrick Rose, you know, this generation's Allen Iverson of defense, 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 and this guy's going to save us. That doesn't work anymore. It didn't work then. It just worked in one year where the East was crap. I mean, I think putting that kind of pressure on him to be the focal point night in, night out, no matter what. I mean, he never had a break in terms of of how they ran that offense. They'd run him off ball sometimes, but it was still to get him shots. And I just think that he's proving that that's too much on his body. I mean, you can't really deny the fact that he's going to have played 50 out of 236 games. And so if that's the case, then, yeah, you've got to hedge and you've got to start. I mean, you just have to adjust your focus and your plan to find a new helper. And not Carlos Boozer help, like an actual helper.
I'm with you on the LaGoya Jabari Parker wagon.
Yeah, I just think, like, tanking is such this, like, I mean, we've talked about this. It was the talk of the summer, because what else are you going to talk about? But tanking is just such this, like, weird stigma of a word where people are like, oh, that's awful. No, tanking is smart under the current rules. It really is. And if you're in a position like this, you should blow it up, keep Derrick Rose, and try to find him a star in this star-studded draft that we, or at least we think is going to be star-studded, and figure out a cheap way to replace, you know, to replace some of the veterans you're dealing out, and then you start rebuilding the team again. Two Chicago-born guys from the same high school that are you know, likely stars in the NBA.
Think of the Adidas commercials.
My God,
man, tough stuff.
It sucks. It really does suck. I was done with the Wolves game Friday night, and you know, I'd done the post game stuff. I went, you know, was waiting for a couple of people to join me at the restaurant next door, and saw it on the TV, like the whole crawl of Derrick Rose knee injury. I was just like, you've got to be kidding me. And then I saw the play, and I was like, okay, no contact, that's really bad. And then hearing, like, the bad thing is, like, hearing that it's a meniscus tear and feeling relieved. Because that's actually, I mean, it's not a make or break injury. They can, there are enough options to where it doesn't have to destroy your career, but it hinders it quite a bit. Or at least it can hinder it quite a bit. And that just, that just sucks. Stupid knees.
It makes you, like, appreciate the guys that are able to stay healthy. Like, not that the other guys aren't doing enough. It's just that, like, it makes you thankful that, man, at least we get some guys that are able to stay healthy.
Yeah, there are some guys that just have that kind of natural, I don't know, I guess, invincibility. Not that they couldn't get hurt, but it would take a lot more than maybe your average athlete. And not to say Derrick Rose is an average athlete, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. The argument from a lot of Bulls fans is that they can't tank because they can't get bad enough. They think they can't get bad enough. I'm always like, you can always get bad enough.
Oh, yes. It doesn't mean you have to end up with the worst record in the league.
But it always surprises me that people, well, they think that A, you need to have the worst record in the league, and B, it's like, look, this isn't complicated. The Warriors did this fairly simply. It's just a matter of tell your guys that they're hurt. That's it.
Yeah, and I think that especially with, you know, with this draft, like let's say there are six guys who are going to be all-stars, right? Maybe there are more than that, but let's say that for sure we can guarantee like six. Being a bottom six team, I don't think would actually take that much.
I agree.
And it's just, I don't know, I think it'd be easy for the Bulls to do, and I think it would be a smart thing for them to do.
Talked all about this. We haven't even talked about the fact that Marc Gasol went down.
Oh, right. Jesus. And Iguodala. I mean, the Gasol one's a little more devastating because it's a knee as opposed to a hamstring. I guess.
And because he's perfect in every way, because he's the best human being in the NBA ever.
Well, okay, that's a weird thing to say, but yeah, I guess so. That was a weird injury. The Iguodala one's a weird injury. Too many injuries.
The Iguodala one I'm not worried about because they can survive without him for a while because they're getting Curry back.
Yes.
And so that, like, Iguodala made them the superhuman team that they were there for a while, but they can live without him for a little bit. The Grizzlies, I don't know. I think they're going to have the immediate rush of rally around the missing player, and then it's going to get really tough for them for a while.
Yeah, probably. I mean,
I will say this. I do think that Gasol is back by, like, some people were saying, like, he'd be out to March, it could be months, and I'm like, the guy played through an abdominal tear. He'll be back in January. Like, I feel pretty confident he's going to be back in January.
Yeah, I mean, if you're the Grizzlies, you got to be more careful than not, right? And you have, I mean, you have the depth to survive. Not that he's all that replaceable, but Kufos is a, I mean, we saw that last year. Like, he's a more than capable fill-in for now. And then you can start waking up Ed Davis and getting him involved. And I mean, I guess you can stretch it out and go small at times on the wing, but. I don't know. Do you think it really hurts their chances of making the playoffs? They'll still make the playoffs, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I just think that
he's not going to be out that long to where it would be so bad that the team just falls out. And they're good. I mean, they're good enough.
Nuts, so I have a hard time predicting how they're going to respond to things.
Right.
Like Rudy Gay went down in 2011. I was like, well, they're done. First playoff win in franchise history. And then, like, Randolph got banged up last year. I was like, well, that'll do it for them. Nope. They're a little bit crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so behind all that crappy news is, hey, Kobe Bryant's going to be a Laker for a while.
Yeah. The Twitter reaction is to laugh at the deal and start making fun of the Lakers. And I don't know. It's a lot of money, but I don't think it's a bad move for the Lakers.
It's a fine move if you don't want to win a title. That's like if you're
okay.
Like,
were they adding LeBron this summer?
I don't ever count them out.
No, come on. Were they adding LeBron this summer?
I don't know. I don't know what the man's thinking. I don't know.
They're not okay. Let me just tell you. They're not gonna. They weren't gonna add LeBron this summer, and so.
But Melo's looking a lot more likely.
Melo, I can see.
Melo's looking like he may be like, hey, so I know I said I wanted to retire, Nick, but you know how these things go.
If I'm going to lose hilariously, I might as well do it in California. I think it's fine. Like, they have decent flexibility. They can still add a max player, and then it's like, well, then they have nothing around them. Yeah, unless Steve Nash retires after this year, and then they've got a little bit more flexibility. Like, I think they have enough flexibility to make it work. And if we're not counting them out as, like, a possibility for anybody, like, you can make just about anything work. And let me add this. It shows that for the players the stars that may want to join this team in the near future, they will take care of you if you win. There is some credence to that. And I'm not saying that's going to make everybody want to rush to play for the Lakers now, but a guy coming off an Achilles tendon that they haven't even seen yet, coming from an Achilles tendon, or at least they haven't seen him outside of practice, a couple of practices, to guarantee that guy like $48, $49 million for the next 2 years after that without seeing it, like, there is some loyalty there that will catch the eye of certain stars around the league that haven't felt that loyalty.
Hold on real quick. I'm going to go get Shaq's reaction to that idea real quick. See what he thinks about the idea of them taking care of the guys that win for them.
Well, I mean, okay, Shaq is a little bit of a different case.
No, I think that there, I think there's always something to be said. Like I've said this before, there's something to be said for loyalty and in doing business the right way. And if a guy has given you 20 years, 18 years of service and done as much as he has for the franchise, I think it's absolutely fine. I think it's here's my honest opinion of it. From the organization standpoint, I'm not surprised at it at all. I'm a little surprised at it from Brian's perspective. I'm a little surprised that he is so oblivious to where he's at in his career that he's not like, well, no, I need to take like 10. And then you guys can go get me help, and then I get number 6, and I can rub it in everyone's face. Like, I thought that would be his approach. I figured he would be smart enough to be like, I can't be the number 1 guy anymore. I need to go get some help and then win another title, and then I can retire and not be constantly left with this burning desire to match Jordan. I'm a little surprised that he took the money.
I'm not, just for the simple fact that I think he looked at I'm sure he looked at the lay of the land and thought, he probably thought, well, LeBron's not coming, or I don't want LeBron to help me get that 6-1 or something along those lines. And then looked at everyone else and was like, well, these guys aren't good enough to help me. You know? And then thought, screw it, I'll go for the scoring title.
Yeah, it's 24.5 million next year, which is going to be 39.9% of their cap.
Yeah, it's a big number.
It's 40%. It's not half, but it's close to half.
Right, and it's still leaves them flexibility to add another major player, and then from that you're just filling in the rest.
Well, we gotta stop right there. Somebody, a radio reporter, said that they could still add a max player. All right, if you're looking at a $16 million contract for a max player,
yes.
Okay, that takes you to 40.
Yes.
You're gonna construct a 12-man roster. You're gonna get another 10 guys for what, 20 mil?
I don't know. We just had this conversation about the Heat 4 years ago, right?
Under the old cap.
Right.
Under the old restrictions.
It's not that different. It's different, but it's not this huge, like, this entire new lay of the land. Yes, you can construct it. You have to be smart, and you have to get bargains, and you have to get veterans, and you have to get guys, you know, in season that are bought out. But it's this idea that it would take a David Blaine actually getting a trick right to make this work isn't true. Like, that's more than doable. It's not easy, but it's doable.
I guess the idea is something similar to, like, Harden Howard with that construction, the way they've done it.
Yeah, I mean, you have to hit on second-round picks. You have to hit at the end of the draft. Like, you've got to hit on every pick you make, but it's doable. The key there is getting, you know, the cheap labor, and that usually happens in end of the first round and second round picks. So
it's interesting because typically when we have these, when you have the ring chasers, they only go to like, there's only, like they're available if you construct a super team, because in the past there haven't been as many, but now like all of the ring chasers are pretty much locked.
Sure. You know? You're still going to have guys get bought out that can matter in a playoff run. I mean, I guess like going into the season, it's not going to look like, oh yeah, these guys are locked and ready to go. It's, oh, there's still a couple pieces away, but those pieces can be added during the season.
I mean, I think a lot of this is that you simultaneously think that their cap situation is better than I do, but you also think maybe their odds of winning a title are worse than I do, because you don't think they can get one of the big guys.
I just don't think they're going to get LeBron, and then Durant isn't there until, I mean, let's say they somehow get Love in 2015. I don't think Love and a 37-year-old Kobe Bryant is good enough to win a title.
No.
I just don't. No. So it's, I think you can set yourself up to, I mean, I don't think that, I don't think they're setting themselves up to, or they can set themselves up to win a title while Kobe is in this contract extension, but I think they can figure it out to where after this extension, if he still wants to play because he's still got some numbers to chase, maybe he takes the big cut then and they add a play. I mean, I think there are options. You know me, I'm all for keeping options open. I think they've kept options open. Realistic yeah. options, not like, oh, they could have added two max players this offseason. Well, yeah, but that's hard to do.
Do you have any thoughts before we move on to games about where the teams that we've been tracking that have been struggling and what your concern level is with them? Are you in the same place that you've been? I'm just doing like a status update on Knicks, Nets, etc.
In terms
Knicks,
of
Nets,
like
Cavs.
Knicks, Nets, Cavs. I mean, I just saw the Nets in person, and my God, is that a tire fire? That is really bad.
Was it worse than you expected?
It was, but they also, I mean, they didn't have Darren, they didn't have Brooke, they didn't have Kirilenko, and I guess Jason Terry's an NBA player. They didn't have him. So that's four guys of their expected, what, 8-man rotation that were out. And they were left with Joe Johnson, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and Andre Blatch, I guess. And so that was really bad, but they also, they're on the road without four of their top eight guys. To be competitive would be kind of a miracle against a good Western Conference team, right?
Yeah.
And so they weren't, and that didn't make me, like, it was a little concerning just to see it in person, but I then thought, all right, Darren is healthy in a couple of weeks. Brooke is healthy in a couple of days. Kirilenko's back in a couple of days. Like, this could get a lot better pretty quickly. I don't know that it will. I don't know that I feel confident that it will get better, you know, by Christmas. But I think that they can still be fine as they head into the playoffs. I don't think they'll be bad enough, especially in the East, to where they'll they're guaranteed to miss the playoffs because of this poor start. The Knicks, I just kind of feel the same way. I feel like I'd like to see this team healthy before I write them off. Maybe they don't get healthy. Maybe neither team gets healthy this season, and they're both screwed. But it's just, I don't know. So many injuries, so many key injuries early on makes me just kind of hesitant to start judging it.
I think it's gonna be, if they do make it, it's gonna be pretty impressive. Like they get back to where they were supposed to be, like that's gonna be a pretty amazing story. Because they're gonna go from seven games under 500 to seven games over.
Yeah, and I mean that'll be difficult to do, but it's doable.
Yeah, it's doable. It's just gonna be impressive.
Yeah, for sure. And then Cleveland, Cleveland, I'm kind of done with, to be honest. Yeah?
They're the one that you're done with.
Well, because they're
healthy.
They're relatively healthy, and I just keep watching all these teams just say, we're going to let anybody but Kyrie Irving beat us. Go ahead. And then Deion Waiters is throwing up shots, and Alonzo G is on the court, and Tristan Thompson's getting numbers, but they're not really meaning anything. And I don't know. I look at that team, and I just think, like, how are they possibly going to score?
Yeah, the Cavs fans, it took a while. The Cavs fans in the beginning were kind of like, well, no, like we're still working through some things. Or, well, Kyrie will get it right and everything will be fine. And then, like, the last, like, three games, they're like, oh, no, we're terrible.
Yeah. I mean, luckily you're in the East, so you're still in it. And you'll, right. And you'll still be in it for a while, even if you maintain this pace. But until they find someone that's helping out Kyrie, or Kyrie just goes into this ridiculous superstar mode and it doesn't matter what the defense is throwing at him, it looks not great.
The Eastern Conference, where you're never out.
Will you finally admit that the Milwaukee Bucks are the second worst team in the league?
Sure.
Okay, it's not Boston.
No, it's not Boston.
Okay, like Milwaukee is exceptionally bad.
Yeah, this will be fun to watch. It's going to be really fun to watch the Boston over under. I'm very excited for.
I wrote about this in Power Tankings today. They start off the year with a 4-game losing streak. They then won 4 straight. They then lost 6 straight, and then they beat the Hawks to possibly start a new streak. And where's their schedule? Here's their schedule. Here are their next 5 games. They are at Charlotte. They're home against very winnable. Yeah, they're home against the Grizzlies, who don't have Marc Gasol.
Winnable.
Home against the Cavs.
Winnable.
And then a home and home with the Bucks.
Winnable.
They could have a 6-game winning streak here. It's true. I don't know that it's likely, but that would be weird for a 4-game losing streak, a 4-game winning streak, a 6-game losing streak, a 6-game winning streak. What I'm saying is at some point they will get to a 10-game winning streak this season. That's just how the math works, I think.
I appropriately feel that they are, to me, the Lakers of the Eastern Conference.
I think they seem like
they're not a bad team. They are. But they seem like they're not a bad team.
But they're good. They're good enough to piss you off with a win.
Yeah, it's true. They're good enough. Like the Hawks. The Hawks win. Like every time a team loses to them, I'm just like, what are you doing? Why are you losing to this team? You should never lose to this team. But you know, I've got Bobcats tonight, but only because it's 3.5.
Yeah, I would still. I wouldn't. I don't know that I would favor Boston in any of those games outside of the Milwaukee games. Well, no, I guess I'd favor them against the Cavs because it's in Boston.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I would expect the Bobcats to actually win tonight. But, I don't know, that's a streakable streak.
The Bobcats are playing really good ball against good teams, and they really struggle against some of the worst teams. I mean, they clobbered the Bucks the other night. But
yeah.
In general, that's been their kind of problem.
Right.
Let's do games while we're talking about it.
Yes.
Your Timberwolves are in Indianapolis.
They are.
And having a little bit of trouble. They've been the Wizards game was like, all right, you had a bad night, and then they lost to who did they get clocked by? The Clippers?
Well, they didn't get clocked by them.
Right. They lost. No, they're right. They were in it, but they just couldn't close. So they got beat by the Clippers, and then they lost somebody else, right?
No, well, then they destroyed Brooklyn.
But right.
That doesn't mean anything. And then they didn't get blown out by the Rockets, but they were handled. It was also a game in which Aaron Brooks scored 26 points.
Like the Wolves are not going to get blown. That really pissed you off. I remember that.
It didn't piss me off necessarily. If anything, it just made the loss that much more like digestible, because people like freaking out. I was like, Look, Aaron Brooks in 2013 went for 26 points. If that happens, I don't know what you do. Like, that's the guy you let beat you, and he beat them, so I don't know. That's fine to me. He had his one good game of the year.
The Wizards loss is the only one that you find that you would describe as a bad, unacceptable loss. But even then, it's you get a few unacceptable losses.
Yeah, that one made me mad. And actually, the Denver loss made me mad. Those are two games they should not have lost. Even with Denver kind of looking a lot better than they did the first two weeks, they're a much better team than that Denver team. So they shouldn't have lost that one. I'm actually for a different site looking at kind of their whether or not their concerns on the road right now, because they're a really good home team, but the road losses, they're 2-5, and their two road victories are at the Lakers and at the Knicks, two teams that are in shambles, right?
Weird to you that the teams that, like, you have problems throughout the year, and instead of fixing them, sometimes they get worse? Because that's what's happening with their transition defense.
Yeah, well, their transition defense is actually good in terms of efficiency, because they force a lot of turnovers in transition. Going into the Brooklyn game, they forced 20% of the time they forced a turnover in transition, which is pretty good. So it helped their points per possession there, but they still give up a significant percentage and significant points because they play at a high pace, the second highest pace in the league. So it's a weird thing. It's like, okay, sometimes it's good and sometimes it's really bad. I guess when it's not good, it's just devastatingly bad for them. So maybe it looks worse than it is, or maybe it just is smoke and mirrors with the turnovers that they force, and it really is just all bad.
By the way, picks update. I went on a 5-0 run on Sunday. I did not do picks for Saturday because I didn't push the button.
But you would have got them all right.
I would have gotten them all right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm at 186-5 on the year.
Look at you.
I'm 14 games over 500.
Look at you.
All right. So I got Mini tonight. I'm taking your Wolves tonight. I think 7's too high for the Pacers. I think
it's
the Wolves
7. Hang with them. I hate this matchup for the Timberwolves simply because Kevin Love is often bad against them.
Yeah.
And they need Kevin Love to be good. And I really don't like the Lance Stevenson-Kevin Martin matchup.
Yeah.
Unless they get Stevenson into foul trouble early, I think he's just too physical for Martin on both ends of the floor. So I'm going to take the Pacers.
Yeah, you'll lay the points? All right.
Yeah, I'll lay the points.
I already said I'm taking Charlotte.
Yeah, I'll take Charlotte.
I'm pretty much never gonna pick Boston unless they play Milwaukee or Utah.
Yeah. That's
the only time I'm gonna take Boston. Are you taking Charlotte?
Yeah, I'll take Charlotte as well.
Okay. The Pistons, who they keep screwing up in massive ways, and then they'll face a team that's just bad enough for them to kind of like reestablish themselves. Like that's what Brooklyn was.
Yes.
And speaking of, the Pistons are 7.5-point favorites at home tonight versus the Bucks.
Give me the Pistons. I don't even have to think about it. This Bucks team's awful.
Which is weird. Like, I don't understand why the Bucks are this. Like, the Bucks should be bad, and I thought they'd be bad, but I didn't expect them to. I honestly, even though I had them at such a low win total, I didn't think that. I was like, it's surprising to me that they're as bad as they are.
Yeah, their backcourt is just so bad. Which is weird because they're actually shooting the three ball really well this year. They're like 10th in the league.
Yeah,
But they can't hit any shots inside the arc, and it's just
OJ Mayo does not have any sort of like he doesn't have a runner or
right
like a sideways jumper like none of that. Like he only has threes and layups.
Yeah, the three guys taking the most shots for them this year so far are OJ Mayo, which is understandable, and the next two are Caron Butler and Gary Neal.
Yeah,
that's not good.
I hate this line. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I want it to die. The Heat are 12-point favorites at home versus the Suns.
That is a nasty line.
I hate it.
I'll go Heat, but I don't feel good about that at all.
Yeah, I'm taking the Heat because I do it in the – if I don't like the line, I take the better team. But yeah. The Suns are gonna cover here, and it's going to piss me off. I just – like I've already chalked that one up as a loss.
Yeah.
Houston's a 1.5-point favorite in Memphis versus the Grizzlies tonight, and I have no idea why. Like, I guess Harden's still out, so that's the reason.
Is Aaron Brooks likely to go off for 26 again? There is a surprisingly large amount of Aaron Brooks fans on the internet, by the way.
I like Aaron Brooks.
He's a great guy, I'm sure. He hasn't been a good basketball player since 2010.
I think he is a decent third guard.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, he was the other night. He was James Harden the other night. I think I'll take Houston, but also don't feel good about that. I'm hoping that just that James Harden plays and it ends up helping out my pick here. I'll take Houston.
The Mavericks are 5.5-point favorites versus the Nuggets, who just barely got by them, I think, on Friday night.
Yeah. I'm going to take the Nuggets to cover. I think the Mavs win, but I think the Nuggets cover.
You think it's going to be another close one?
Yeah. I think we got a close one on our hands.
I think Dallas blows them out at home. I think Dallas is going to be mad at that loss.
That was a fun game, by the way.
Yeah, it was. The Spurs, all the Mavs games are fun.
Yeah.
The Spurs are 10-point favorites at home versus the Pelicans.
Spurs are coming off such an embarrassing blowout for the Cavs that they were pranking Tim Duncan on the bench. Matt Bonner called an isolation play for himself. I like that he and Tony Parker fought for the rebound. He tried to give it to Parker. Parker just said no, like put his hands up and backed away.
He's like, no.
So Bonner starts dribbling the ball up the court and then calls an isolation play for himself, and then Parker comes and gets the ball from him. I'll go Spurs. They're so hot right now. They're Hansel.
The Pelicans are not ready to compete with the Spurs, though.
Yeah.
That's my thing. The Bulls without Derrick Rose. Ooh, this is interesting.
I don't like this game at all.
This line jumped. It opened at 1.5 for Chicago, and now it's 3.5 for Chicago.
I guess I'll take the Bulls, but I don't. It's just that the Jazz are so bad.
Yeah, the Jazz are just—they're just so bad.
Yeah,
they have no idea. I realized this the night. I came to kind of like a moment of clarity throughout the season. I started to understand Washington, and the reason that Washington is not in the pit with the rest of the East, to me, there's the pit that has the Pistons, and like the Nets are languishing in the mud, and the Cavaliers are like drowning, the waterboarding themselves, and it's just a whole bunch. It's like a pit of misery. The reason the Wizards are not in there, the Wizards know what they're doing. They just don't always execute it correctly.
Yes.
But they have a plan. They have an idea of what they should be doing.
Yes.
I think the Wizards are actually going to be okay. So.
I do too. As long as they don't suffer a big injury, I don't think they can withstand that. But I think they'll be okay.
The Blazers are 7.5-point favorites tonight versus the New York Knicks.
I am riding this Blazers team. I'm all about them.
This is like a double win for me because I'm riding the Blazers as much as possible, and I've in the pick segment I've just started saying fade the Knicks forever. Just
yeah.
Until the Knicks prove that they have gotten themselves corrected, I am fading the Knicks and Nets every single game.
The Bulls Jazz game is on NBA TV, so that'll be fun. Ratings should be through the roof. I hope they bill it as like a revenge game for the 98 finals. That's what I would do.
Byron Russell attends.
Or what if just picture in picture they just showed game 6 of the 98 finals in there. Just split screen it. That's what they should do.
I'm trying to think of like what this is going to wind up as. Like, God, who's there even there? Like, who's a backup point guard for the Jazz right now?
John Lucas III.
John Lucas III. Marcus Teague.
By the way, if there are any Wolves fans who haven't watched a Bulls game yet this year, if you want to feel better about Ricky Rubio's shooting motion, watch Marcus Teague take a spot up three-pointer.
Oh, mean.
It was one of those things where I legitimately felt bad for an NBA player when I saw him take a shot the other night. Like a spot up wide open three, he missed the rim entirely, hit it off the far side of the backboard. And the motion was so bad, like, my jaw dropped, and I just thought, oh, no, Marcus. No, that's not okay.
Michael K. Gilchrist jumper, I've realized, is like in when you play NBA 2K and you hold on to the shot button too long.
Yeah, Jermaine O'Neal's is the same way.
Yeah, so really super difficult. Okay, I think we've covered everything. Rose is out. Kobe's extended. Bad games.
And hopefully nobody else gets injured. Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Zach.